Before we continue, I'd like to share a few reminders to support accessibility and smooth participation. Please remain muted unless you are speaking. When speaking, please state your name before your comment. This supports our ASL interpreters, participants joining by phone, and individuals who will listen to the recording. For those joining by audio, you may mute or unmute yourself by pressing star six. And raise or lower your hand by pressing star nine. For those joining by computer, please use the microphone icon to mute or unmute and the raise hand feature located under the reactions menu. Before we begin discussions, I want to remind everyone of our visual description practice. When making comments, speakers are asked to briefly describe themselves the first time they speak. This supports equitable access for all members. A brief description may include clothing or distinguishing features and your location relative to the screen. So I'll provide a brief example. This is Dr. Maggie Butler. I'm a woman with shoulder-length hair. I am wearing a solid dark colored top. I'm seated indoors and speaking from a conference room. So at this time, I will read tonight's bus and rail subcommittee agenda. Just give me one moment to ensure that it is visible on the screen. Can you let me know if the agenda is visible?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Yes, it is. Do you see it, Tina?
Yes, I can see
Yes.
it.
I don't see it.
Let's see one second.
I see it.
Phil, do you see it?
It's
I don't.
visible.
Yes, I can see it.
Okay.
Okay. Chair Calabia, I'm gonna go ahead and read the agenda
And this
as
is Rico.
posted.
I see it as well.
Okay. 4 p.m. call to order and roll call by system-wide accessibility staff. 4:05 p.m. review and approval of agenda prior meeting minutes by our chair, Tino Calabia. 4:10 p.m. rear door bus boarding. I believe this conversation will be facilitated by Mr. Caffin. And then the wayfinding focus group update at 4:45 by Metro staff and Sandy Nuzel. And then 5:15 p.m. committee discussion. 5:45 p.m. public comment period. And 6 p.m. adjournment. We will now proceed with roll call. When your name is called, please confirm your presence. Susan Bullmaster, Darnice Bush, Tino Calabia,
Present.
thank you, Vanessa Coles, Rico Dancy,
This is Rico. I'm here.
thank you, Debbie Fisher. Marcy Goldstein.
Yeah.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Swatha Nanda Kumar.
I'm here. Thanks, Maggie.
You're very welcome. Philippa Mizell. Sandy Nuzel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Sarah Rod, I do believe she may be a few minutes late if she's
I am
not
actually here,
listening.
but I am in a car traveling.
Oh, well, good to see you.
Excuse
Thank
me,
you.
Philippa Mazzell is present. My phone twisted something off the screen. I've been having internet trouble. So anyway, I'm here.
No problem. Thank you so much. Doris Ray. Denise Rush, Paul Summerford, Patrick Sheehan, and Philip Weinthrop. At this time, I will turn the meeting over to Chair Calabria to proceed with the agenda. Chair Calabria, you have the floor.
Yes, everyone has seen the agenda or heard about the agenda. All in favor of the agenda?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Tino, I received an email from Steve with a bunch of photographs. Do we want to talk about that on the agenda tonight?
Yes, that's part of the discussion of rear door bus boarding, right, Steve?
Right. It's a little bit different. There are some photos that I have apart from that. And we might talk about those if we have some time in the comments section at the end. I just had a chance to pull them together, unfortunately, about 10 minutes before the meeting.
Yeah, they look like roadways cut through the snow to get to the bus.
You know, one is a picture of a pathway from a shelter to the street for the snow. Another one is the first front facing sign that is a bit of an issue because it's not exactly correct. And there's a picture of kind of a discussion that WMATA and the city of Washington has to have regarding clearing the right lane for buses going into DuPont Circle. But so those are different than what we're discussing today, but I wanted to send them out anyway. If we don't have time, we can talk about them at the next meeting.
All right. Let's see. I think everyone is in favor of the agenda. The next item is the minutes. Am I
Oh,
right?
I had a comment. I had
Okay.
I had a clarification, I think, but unfortunately, it was the only item where Steve Kaffin said something, and I don't have the minutes in front of me, unfortunately.
Well, I guess we can wait till.
Okay, I actually I can probably check that out before the meeting is over
Okay.
and let you know. I'll just check it on the cell phone, okay?
Okay, so we'll wait for that before we move on accepting the minutes.
But
We'll
the minutes are fine for me, except for that sentence that
Okay,
I just.
we'll wait till we hear from you on that. So the next item is rear door boarding, correct?
That is correct, Chair Calabi.
Yes. Actually, the first picture you showed us, Steve, relates to rear door boarding in the sense that the pathway to the bus is more to the rear than it is to the front, I imagine. Do you want to comment on it, Steve?
Yes. Let's look at this from the standpoint of our constituents.
Sure.
The you know, but first, let's raise. Let me quickly just raise the points that you've made in the past at meetings. The side door boarding may reduce dwell time, but only if three or more persons are boarding. Otherwise, it really doesn't. And there's a conflict if people board from the rear door and other people are descending. Because as you can imagine, people start to descend, others start to board, and it actually slows down the process. So rear door boarding is good, but I think once you get to three passengers, there really is no savings. And the savings might be that from what I've seen, people are more inclined to pay their fares if they pass the operator than if they board from the rear, Tino. But the issue that we all got involved in, I think it was about a year or 18 months ago, was the stroller policy. Phil, am I right? That's right. And the issue was, how do we handle strollers and also the requirement that wheelchairs have priority in front boarding? And a policy was developed by WMATA and passed around, and we got involved in looking at it. And the policy was, and I see it working very well, that wheelchairs, up to two wheelchairs, have priority. However, if there is a space to lift the side front seats, a stroller would use that by lifting the side seats. And ideally, the stroller would use the left side because, as you know, the front seat itself can actually be raised and lowered independently. And so the stroller pusher actually can sit and hold on to the stroller. So, the policy got a lot of iteration in different departments of WMATA, and it came to us, and we looked at it, and we passed on it, if I recall, so long as it clarified that wheelchairs have priority. And I've seen it working well. I haven't experienced two wheelchairs and a stroller on a bus, from my experience. The one time it becomes an issue is when the operator sometimes forgets to remind the stroller boarder to raise, one of the front side seats, and the boarder, and he doesn't. But that's more the exception than the rule. So I don't think that's it. I don't think that's an issue, and we spent a lot of time dealing with that. With respect to rear door boarding, WMATA has tried a to see if by removing several seats towards the rear, they can actually create space for strollers and large bags. And so I'd say on about one out of five buses, maybe one out of six buses, going back about a year ago, they removed the seats just in front of the boarding door. That I have never seen a stroller nor a big bag using that. And the reason is that it's very difficult to push a stroller through that narrow walkway. Without the stroller coming against a pole or coming against someone's leg. And so the windup is the thought process was certainly in the right place. But given the configurations of our buses, it's very difficult to do. See, the ideal would be to be able to lower the rear door enough so that the stroller could board from the rear. But with the buses we currently have, it's just not, it's not being done. I've sent it to customer service a suggestion that they might want to return the seats because they're not being used. And I think it's more secure and less dangerous for the stroller to follow the stroller policy that WMATA has developed.
Did you
So,
get a response?
I'm sorry, Tino?
Did you get a response to what you sent in?
I didn't. I got the automatic response that they would send it to the appropriate department to look at, and haven't gotten a reply yet. In fact, I wonder whether how difficult it would be. to actually put back those seats that were removed, or whether they're sitting, they're no longer accessible. I think if the bus were reconfigured, because Tino, you, I mean, you have experience in Europe, in some of the bus systems in Europe, the big area in the middle where rear boarding is done, that area is wide open, and strollers go there, and wheelchairs go there, and some standing passengers go there. But we don't have the space, given the kind of buses we have, to create that.
Steve, let me mention that while you recalled discussions about rear door boarding, and in particular with respect to strollers, actually, I recall many, many years ago when a staffer came to us and asked us about rear door, not rear door. Stroller boarding with a stroller. And at that time, the circulator bus not only allowed for it, it had a policy on strollers. And I pointed out that to this new unit head who was inquiring about it. Of course, the circulator is now gone, but they had a policy and it worked fairly well. As far as I know. In any event, with respect to replacing or removing the configuration, restoring the configuration to what it was before strollers and baggage was considered, I think you're right. It would be difficult to do that or costly to do that, and maybe not necessary to do it. But go
Yeah.
ahead. I already commented on the history. We were one of the first ever to talk about strollers, and in fact, we advised the staffer to look at the policies and practice of the circulator bus. But go ahead.
No, I think you're absolutely right. We spent several meetings, and I think not only in bus rail but also in the AAC, because it's applicable to our constituents. We had a presentation of the policy, at the proposed policy at that time, if you recall. We had certain comments, and the important thing was the priority given for the use of those side-facing seats that raise when needed. And that was clearly stated in the final draft, and the final policy that was issued, which alleviated the principal concern that we had.
I see Phil Posner has his hand up. Phil?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to remind us of a year ago, particularly now that spring is coming. But the trains and the buses, there is space in the back of each rail car for strollers, large packages, and suitcases. And I know when I'm on the platform, I always recommend that people enter through the rear door, not through the middle door. But most people don't believe me. On the buses, there has not been sufficient advertising of the policy. So people also want to go in the front so that the driver knows they're there and can announce their stop and all the other things. But I think having rear door boarding on both rail cars and on buses is a good idea. It's been discussed extensively at the AAC, but it's really important to advertise the policy and the directions, and perhaps signage on the buses, right by the front door, a paste on that says board to the rear, wheelchairs, baby buggies, and shopping carts or luggage might be useful. And that might be an inexpensive fix because those magnetic signs can be slapped right on there. And also, when the driver pulls up, an announcement made by the driver, which includes what the bus is, where it's going, and just say wheelchairs and baby carriages, please board through the rear door. So those are my suggestions. Information, information, information. Thank you.
Sarah also has her hand up. Sarah?
Oh, hi. Sorry. Yeah, so I love part of that suggestion. The idea of information, information, information is great. I love the idea of slapping a magnetic sign on that would be hopefully relatively inexpensive and easy to do and easy to remove. However, I have serious concerns about directing wheelchairs to the back of metro rail trains. And here is why. We get not a lot, but regular reports about people in wheelchairs or using mobility devices that are having trouble getting on the train, that either get stuck in the gap between the platform and the train itself, or just having trouble getting over that, or having trouble taking, need more time to get on. And we really need to be sending them to the front of the train so that the conductor or the operator, I'm sorry, I don't know the correct term, is going to see them. That has been a repeated problem that they have not been seen when they're having trouble boarding a train. And so I think it's a wonderful idea, but I would like to direct maybe the baggage and the strollers to the back and the wheelchairs to the appropriate doors. Hopefully towards the front of the train. Thanks.
Thank you. Steve, do you want to move on?
I think I think we've covered the different pieces. One thing, two things. The first, of course, is we're increasingly using accordion buses, and of course, in order to spread the load, and the rear doors almost definitely should be open because it's just a long walk and over a hump to have front door boarding. And especially if the accordion buses are used to increase the capacity of the buses. The other thing is that there's an element of vulnerability by with rear door boarding. And so, in my opinion, I think rear door boarding should be at the discretion of the operator. It should be the norm for events. In other words, after a sports event, after a concert, also for clusters of students. That rear door should be opened automatically just to get people in as quickly as possible. After dark, there's a feeling of vulnerability by having people enter the bus from the rear and without the driver being the gatekeeper and bus riders not seeing who's entering the bus. So, whatever the policy is or turns out to be, I think when it reaches, let's say, a certain point in the evening, the boarding should always be in the front.
And the driver can control that because the driver has the ability to keep the door, the rear door shut, I imagine. One other thing, though, you may have touched on it, but very lightly, so lightly I don't recall. Rear door boarding, unfortunately, encourages some fare evaders to take that route and more easily enter the bus without paying the fare. It, in my experience, limited though it may be, the people who evade paying the fare are fewer when they enter the front, although they do a lot. It's unfortunately so true, they just disregard it entirely, many. But this is even worse with rear door boarding. They just come on willy-nilly. And I would say that if the problem of fare evasion has gradually been dealt with in terms of Metro Rail, I suspect that it's not been dealt with effectively with respect to Metrobus. So whatever the amount used to be of losses to fare evasion across the system, the losses are probably less now with Metro Rail, and they are the same or even worse now with buses, and in particular with those who enter through the rear door. Steve, do you have any comment on fare evasion?
Yeah, I do. I think the answer is to get more, as many people as possible using Metro cards and using the weekly bus fares. And I've mentioned this a couple of times as a suggestion. The problem that our system has, that a lot of other bus systems, particularly in Europe, have resolved, is to set a maximum fare on the use of their card. Currently, with our cards, if you don't put a pass on the card, you keep paying and paying and paying and paying, versus having a maximum that you don't need a bus pass anymore. Get rid of that complex system, but pay up to a certain amount for a week. And after that, in effect, you ride free. And make that amount, the amount of the bus pass. It would encourage people who don't have these Metro cards to have Metro cards, and they would know that that there's a maximum they're going to pay to use the Metro card. I think there's an among you know so many of our riders are frugal and watching what they spend, and people, one of the concerns about having a bus pass is you're paying that amount whether you use the bus a lot or whether you don't use the bus for that entire week. And, you know, people don't know. They say, suppose I'm away on vacation, or suppose I'm hospitalized or something like that. You know, by not having cumulative, by having an automatic fare, it doesn't account for that. So, you know, it's a, you know, Tino, it's a, you know, you raise a complex issue, and the solution is to get more people, more of our residents, on bus passes or on Metro cards.
Well, I'm a little confused. If you don't use it, you don't lose money. If you don't, and most people, I would imagine, even those who evade paying their fare, they have cards, And if they don't use it, they don't lose anything. If they do use it, obviously they pay the fare that's expected. And one last thing on fare evasion. Some time ago, when we.
How do you pay for a bus ride on Metro?
Excuse me? Somebody. I thought I heard somebody. But with respect to enforcing the payment of fares, some time ago when we discussed it, I mentioned that cameras pointed toward the rear of the bus can capture who these people are who just willy-nilly walk onto the bus without showing a pass or just getting on with whatever they have. When I earlier suggested this, we could have the cameras identify who does this multiple times. I wouldn't say we would have to enforce it with someone who's only done it once or maybe so infrequently it doesn't matter much. But many of these fare evaders do so consistently, and a camera could capture them three or four or five times. And my suggestion would be at some point, maybe at having captured the same person five times, there could be some sort of posted notice about who this person is. And in that way, at least shame the person, if not allow enforcement of the by someone to get them. In any event, Sarah, I think, has her hand up again.
I did. I just wanted to make a couple quick comments. So one, I'm pretty sure we got a briefing not too long ago, or maybe it was a long time ago, about fare evasion is coming down on the buses and the enforcement mechanisms that people are using. So maybe for a future meeting, we could get someone to come and give us an update on how that's going. And the other thing that might be great, because I think there's probably a lot of question out there about what the fares are and the different kinds of schemes that Steve was talking about. I don't honestly know because, the Metro Access pass that I have works on a bus if I wanted to take one. So I don't know what the options are these days. I know there's a couple of different kinds of things out there. There's passes for students, there's discount fares for different things. So maybe, Maggie, we could get someone to come in and tell us what all the different things are. And maybe Steve could chime in on what some of the other things are out there in the world that we might consider changing things to or recommending what might be a good adjustment. Thanks.
Many students don't have to pay a fare.
Well, actually, it depends. Like the university students do, they pay it as part of their university
Yes.
charges and stuff like that. But it also doesn't work during the summertime. And it actually is quite expensive. And I know that I just heard a briefing the other day that the policy is going to be updated in some ways. And I would like to hear about that.
Okay, point well taken. Steve, do you want to continue and then move towards the close of the discussion?
Yeah, I just let me clarify what I suggested. The ideal is to get everybody on a Metro card. A good number of people are hesitant, and to get people on bus passes. A bus pass is incredibly economical, but people feel uncomfortable to commit themselves every week to a certain amount without knowing whether they're going to use the bus or not. If more people, or that percentage that were that isn't aren't on bus passes were, I'll bet we could lower the somewhat the fare. So that let's say it would be $8 or $9 for an entire week. And if you hit $8 or $9, you ride free for the rest of the week. That Tino, it's not going to stop people, I think, from evading fares if they're going to evade fares. But by putting more people on Metro cards and making it so extremely efficient to use them, and knowing the maximum they're going to pay for the week, I think that may help reduce the evasion. Other than that, really, I have no suggestions on that. You're more tuned to that than I am.
Okay, so I imagine we've wound up the discussion of rear door boarding, Steve.
Yes, I think so. I think, it's in rush hour, it makes a lot of sense. And for events, it certainly makes a lot of sense. For a couple of people boarding, it really doesn't, because the bus ride, I think people are more, I've noticed, and I don't know the statistics, people are more inclined to pay their fares if they're passing the operator. And the operator is looking at them to make sure they're boarding correctly. Then just kind of slipping up the stairs and into the rear, if you know what I mean. So rear boarding does have its place. I think Metro, I think WMATA is increasingly encouraging rear boarding, and the card readers that have now been placed next to the rear doors are evidence of that. So
Okay.
there we are.
So this is Sandy. I have a question. I'm really only familiar with riding buses in Fairfax County. I'm not real f I have don't think I've ridden a bus in DC more than once or twice, and out in Maryland maybe once or twice. But are bus stops well designed so that rear door opens? I mean, I know in a lot of places there's, just a concrete platform by the front door or no platform whatsoever. But throughout DC, do you feel like the bus can pull over in such a way, whether it's a bus island or the curb, so that people can functionally use the rear door much of the time?
I'd say most of the time, yes. However, oftentimes, especially if the bus stop is coming right after a parking space, the bus operator may not be able to pull that rear door parallel to the sidewalk, but he will be able to get the front door close enough for boarding. That's something that really deals with, WMATA and the city having discussions and what have you. But it's certainly, but it's, but the operator, if the operator can, the operator tries to go parallel. That may be part of their training, because I see it done all the time. Sandy.
Okay, I was just wondering if it,
But
if
it's not, but it's not the 100% rule.
right, but it's a significant amount, so it's worth discussing it. Okay.
Yes.
Well, with respect to bus systems that charge no fare, the Montgomery County ride-on system does not charge a fare, so there's no problem there. There's no bus evasion, fare evasion, because you just walk on the bus. And I think that may be true of Alexandria's bus system. Isn't the it free if you just stay within the system?
That is correct.
Yeah. So there are a couple of instances in which, fare evasion is not an issue at all because the fare is free. Steve, I guess we've concluded the discussion of rear door boarding, right? Okay, so Maggie, do we want to move on to
Yes.
the topic?
Sure. So the next topic is wayfinding focus group update. Myself and I do have Sandy Newzell as facilitators, but I just wanted to, from my perspective, I want to share a reminder that I shared in the AAC meeting as it pertains to the work of the wayfinding group. The WMATA staff, they will begin the implementation of signage in mid-April, which is a change from our initial discussion at the February 6th meeting. And in addition to that, they will be reviewing comments from that February 6th engagement with the AAC and the public and going through comments to identify which will be able to be implemented at this time and which may need to be implemented at another time, and which may be which comments or recommendations may not be feasible at this time. So we'll have a report back from them, and then we're anticipating you all, the AAC members and members of the public, joining us for an on-site visit in April, mid-April.
Okay. Well, Sandy, do you want to comment?
Sure, I'll jump in. We put the signage working group, there were my five or six of us who were at the meeting February 6th at the Metro headquarters at L'Enfant, not the station, but the building. And we were shown mock-ups of some of the ideas that are modifications to the way signage has been done in throughout the Metro Rail system. There's some inconsistencies, and they're trying to come up with a plan that would be the best possible signs for all riders at a reasonable cost to Metro. But the plan is once they establish what that signage look and feel will be, then that will be implemented throughout the Metro system. So there's going to be our opportunity to give feedback. And we wrote up some rough notes after the February 6th meeting. Maggie shared notes from Metro's side. And I received those February 27th while I was visiting grandchildren in Oregon. And pardon me, but I've been a little bit swamped since I got back. So I just shared those notes from the Metro staff side, there what they heard us saying. I just shared that with everybody again this morning, and we will be taking a look at those and get back to you. But Maggie and Metro, I'll feed that information through Maggie to pass along appropriately to Metro. But this afternoon, this signage working group, about six of us out of the 10 or 11 that are now saying they'd like to participate. Six of us did meet just before the bus and rail subcommittee meeting. And the topic of discussion we had was sort of after the way ahead station ahead maps, SAMs, the vertical signs, the signs that will be vertically displayed on round pillars and square pylons in the station. Those had been presented to the, I believe it was the bus and rail subcommittee in December. It might have been the AAC. I really need to get a timeline of how this has all happened and memorize it. But that was presented to us by Metro staff on one of the meetings, the Zoom meetings that everybody could attend. And the biggest change in signage was that they wanted to have the stations listed reading up from the bottom. The station you were at would be at the bottom of the list, and then you would be going up the pillar or pylon reading station ahead, and the end of the line would be at the top. So this was a great concern to six of us. I can say six of us who were meeting today all disagreed with that principle. And three of us who were meeting today were at the February 6th meeting at headquarters, where we got to see what that looked like in a mock-up. So we've all had a chance to sort of digest this, think about it. And today we were coming up with reiterating our concerns about reading from bottom to top. And I'll try to go through these because I think I have the floor for a little while and then open it up to questions.
Please do.
So reading top down, and yes, Metro says this is a map, although one of our members says it's really a triptych. It's trying to show you how your trip will progress, and a triptych should be written from top to bottom. The way we all read in English in America is from top to bottom. Signs in stores, signs at the movie theater, signs on the highway, books, obviously. But that's sort of an intuitive way we think because of reading. We start at the top. Okay, this is the beginning, and now we go down. I will point out that the digital signs that Metro has in mid-platform stations on the Silver Line and mid-platform, I know they're at L'Enfant. I know they're at Metro Center. I can't remember if they're at Gallery Place, but many stations have a digital sign. I'm not talking about the signs hanging from the ceiling that just list the next two or three or four trains coming. What line that train is, how long it is, and how many minutes till it arrives and its final destination. It does not list stations in between where you are at this moment and the end of the line, but it gives you that indication of which direction the train is going if you have the end of the line memorized. So back to the digital signs that stand on the platforms. At the top of the sign, it will say it'll give you information about which direction you're going. Now, on the silver lines, it's westbound or eastbound. On red line, I don't know if I've seen a platform digital sign that points out red line, but it might say, towards the end of the line would be the appropriate thing to say. But anyway, it starts with basically which direction are you going? And then it lists the station that you're at. And then below that, it lists the next succeeding stations. And then, depending on how many lines of how many stations there are, it will, if need be, do a little symbol saying, okay, there's a gap. We can't list all the stations and put the end of the line at the bottom. And the number of rows of information is determined by the height of the letters. And so that each band across that digital sign is, I'm going to guess, about 3 inches. I need to learn to carry a measuring tape with me. And those are nice large letters, and us low vision people love them because we can walk right up to them and read them. And they have a dark background. Thank you, Sarah Myers. So it's light letters on a dark background. They're very easy to read. So that concept of reading top to bottom is already in the stations on those digital mid-platform signs. So we all six of us who were at the meeting today, and I think also one or two people who couldn't attend the discussion today before this meeting, agree that top to bottom is the way to read it. Now, the mock-up that we saw at L'Enfant headquarters, The lettering was small. It was about 5/8 of an inch high, if I recall. The goal was to have every station listed, fair enough. But there was black space in between the lettering of the station name. So we felt that the font size could be a bit larger and still fit all of the station names, stations, from where you are to the end of the line. The another, let's see. If the argument is that people need to know the end of the line, that's the first and foremost thing they need to see. You could put the end of the line, and I can't honestly remember if that is put at the end, at the top on the, I think it is, in the sense of this is headed towards Glenmont or wherever. Is at the top of the list, and then the next thing in a different color is the station you're at, and then you can have succeeding stations. I believe that's the way it is currently on many of the pylons and pillars, old school design, not the reading top to bottom. So I'm sorry, I'm lost for words. It just seems so blatantly obvious to me that that you should read from top to bottom, not bottom to top. In addition to the font size that we saw could be a little bit bigger, we believe, and still fit all the information in the size that we saw. We were pretty much in agreement that the color of the lines, because these station ahead maps, the SAMs, are trying to illustrate when there's more than one line running parallel, like a green and yellow line run parallel through, through the same station and then eventually split and go different directions, or the orange, silver, and blue line. So there's a thin line with the color of those lines. So there would be a, I guess, white or gray for silver, there'd be, yellow or green or blue or orange line. And we're pretty much in agreement that those lines could be a little bit wider so they'd be easier to see the color and perhaps separated by a fraction of an inch so that when you have yellow and green next to each other, it's not always possible to tell yellow and green apart. Green and blue are never parallel, so that's not as much of an issue. But for those of us who have trouble seeing colors, seeing the color of the line might be a little easier if that line band is a little bit wider. And we also felt that as the goal is to have signage that everybody can read, and I think we folks with low vision, I mean, we're all legally blind, but we think of ourselves as low vision because we manage pretty well. But there's a lot of seniors, there's a lot of people who have low vision or vision impairments that are relatively minor, but enough to make it difficult for them to see things, might make them hesitate to keep riding Metro. So a couple of things there that we felt. It's a different issue, and I know Metro's working on it. Better lighting in the stations on the platforms. I've heard from time to time, well, we need to clean the lights, but well, this, well, that. But if there could be better lighting where you need to read signage, that would be helpful to all people, especially seniors. I think that's the high points. If people start asking questions, I can probably remember other things that we were talking about. Or maybe if, oh, shucks, the three people who were on the meeting are members of the public. So I don't know if I have to force them to wait, but I think it would be appropriate to have them comment if I've left out something
No,
important.
let them comment now.
Okay. So I don't know if Janice Samuel or Jillian Bonte or Marsha Maas or Hawea Abbey managed to join this meeting.
Sandy, this is Janice. You covered our highlights. Thank you.
Sandy, if I could just ask a technical question. Now,
Sure.
you've gone, the group has gone to headquarters once, but in between, you've been able to talk, and maybe even today, are you able to zoom into each other, or how do you do it?
Yes, I can set up a Zoom meeting, so we have zoomed in. It's tricky to find a time that everybody can meet, and we thought we would meet on Metro Mondays a couple times a month, just before the AAC meeting and the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, and of course this month those are both in person slash hybrid, and so it was a little awkward to try to figure out how to do a Zoom meeting. Not to mention I was on an airplane Monday, last Monday,
But
so
it's
we decided to meet today, and six people were able to join in out of the 10 or 11 who said they want to participate.
but it depends on your ability to have Zoom, right? We can't for
It's my personal Zoom.
Magnus, I can ask you if another group wants to meet in between meetings, is it possible to use the Zoom that we're now using for this meeting, in between meetings?
We'd probably have to set up another link, but we can definitely, if it's a subcommittee meeting of AAC or one of the subcommittees, we could set that up, but not using this particular link, but another link.
And Tino, I'll say that that's what Anu did for us when we were working on the bylaws. She set up another
Right.
Zoom because that was official business. I mean, that was an official working group. We were trying to review the bylaws.
Well, what you've been doing with your group, even with outsiders like Janice, you've been forced to, well, because you have Zoom access, you've been able to do it. But for those of us who don't have Zoom access, can we go back to Maggie, the way we used to go back to Anu for Zoom access?
You definitely can. I can provide you all with a separate link, just not the link for the AAC and the bus and rail, well, the AAC meetings. I can create another link for you all.
Okay.
In an ideal world, I would love to meet in person every time, but that just takes up so much more time
Oh, yes.
that we meet by Zoom.
Yes.
And we've only met twice or maybe three times. It's not like we've met a lot, but we're trying to keep the ball rolling. We're trying to stay on top of, the back and forth between, what we suggested to start this working group. And then what WMATA showed us, and we want to give informed, useful feedback to Metro to through Maggie so that they can listen to our suggestions. And I'm very impressed that Maggie said the sooner the better, because perhaps that could be incorporated into the rollout at L'Enfant Plaza. And either way, even if we don't get feedback right away, we are going to have the opportunity to comment about what we see at L'Enfant Plaza. So, but really, the sooner the better that we submit our comments.
Thus far, you have submitted comments through your discussion. What do you see are the next steps, and when do you envision successful closure?
Well, I may need to ask. I'll jump in and Maggie can correct me if I'm wrong. The next steps are for our group to take the comments that WMATA put together what they heard at the February 6th meeting, and we can, sort of correct those or modify or embellish and explain more what we meant. What we meant and what they heard might be two different things. And we can go above and beyond. And, if it didn't get brought up at that meeting, but we have had a chance to think about what we saw afterwards, we can submit comments about those things too. There was a lot to cover in 2 hours. There were one, two, well, there was one sign, the SAM sign, reading bottom to top, which was the major focus, I think, for most of us. But there were other sign examples there that are worth commenting about. It'd be, I don't know, Maggie, could we go down to L'Enfant Plaza and see them again? Are they in a room somewhere that we'd be allowed to look at them? Because I'm not sure I could digest everything in 2 hours.
So we can definitely engage to see if we can get you another viewing. We do still have the prototypes,
Okay.
so it would just be a process of me coordinating another trip for you all to come down and see.
I was just thinking if one or two of us wanted to go, could it be informal rather than making a big hullabaloo out of it? But
Oh yes, that as well. We just have to coordinate with the owners of the prototype so that they know that you all
okay.
are coming
Okay.
down.
Fair enough. So it's what, March the 9th now, and it'll be mid-April before the rollout in L'Enfant Plaza. So, in the next week or two would be the appropriate time to come go down and look at this in person again, sort of a refresher of what we saw as we're pulling together comments to submit through Maggie to WMATA.
I see Sarah's hand up again, and I think Steve also.
Yeah, just a thought. I don't know if this would work out, but given the timing and the request, Maggie, if those signs are still at L'Enfant headquarters where we saw them originally, could we put them up for the before maybe the Metro Access Subcommittee next week? If people showed up early to take a second look at them, or if anybody else from the committee wanted to take a look at what we're talking about, would that possibly work out? Because that at least would save. It would be a time when a bunch of people would be heading that way anyway.
I can definitely engage. I am messaging the owner of the prototypes now. So hopefully by the end of the meeting, I can have an answer for you about that.
That's a great idea, Sarah.
Yeah, it is. So we know about the next steps. Eventually, as I mentioned before, I hope that the group can look above the stations at the bus bay areas, which in my experience leave a lot to be desired in terms of lighting, in terms of lack of digital information on when buses are coming or when they're going to leave next, that sort of thing. So whenever we are completed with what the group has been doing so far. I hope then, whenever that may be, maybe in September or maybe next program year, we can deal with the above stations and where the bus bays are. Steve, you have your hand up.
Yeah, just a suggestion. Since we're fairly close to the rollout in L'Enfant Plaza, it might be best for us to kind of take a little guided tour around L'Enfant Plaza after they have made the modifications, and perhaps, the group that made the presentation to us. In effect, shows us what they've done. That might be, at this point, a more efficient way to look at this than to perhaps look back at the presentation. and we'll see real world how things look in practice, and can perhaps make better suggestions.
Steve, I think WMATA is a step ahead of you. They've told us they will do that. Okay, that's the point, that we'll be invited down there after they've had a chance to install the signs. What might be more useful is individuals take themselves on a self-guided tour at L'Enfant Plaza to see what the signage is like now, and then after the rollout, it'll be more obvious what has changed, and you can see if the old way was better, or you've now seen two examples and neither of them really works. So yes, there'll be an opportunity to see them again. And Maggie, correct me if I've misspoken.
No, you're absolutely correct. The
Okay.
next visit is mid to late April for you all to conduct the site visit.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Is that coincidental to Bus Rail's meeting at headquarters? I mean, since we're
No.
headquarters, we could be obviously at L'Enfant Plaza too. Is it possible to tie the two together?
I think you're misunderstanding the point, Tino. We were shown mock-ups
Yes, I
of the
am.
new signs at the headquarters building,
Right.
but when those become real signs in L'Enfant Plaza, there'll be no need to be standing in the headquarters building. The appropriate place would be in the station.
Well, my point is, can't we use the opportunity when we have to do an in-person meeting at headquarters? Can't we do that the same day we can see the mock-ups?
Well, that's what Sarah was saying, and Maggie's going to try to line up for the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting next week, that we might be able to see the mock-ups then in the
Right.
headquarters.
I see Philippa's hand is up. Philippa, you're muted.
Hi, everyone. This is Philippa, African American female. I'm just trying to understand why is Metro WMATA, whatever, so hell bent on doing these bottom to top signs? And then it's going to be different in other stations. I mean, who's going to know what to do? This is going to be extremely confusing. I mean, this is not Asia. We don't read like that. We read top to bottom and left to right. So I don't understand what's going on here. Why are they wanting to change all that?
I can give the answer that I've been told.
No, make them speak for themselves.
Yeah, okay.
I want to hear what they have to say this time. Anybody there?
So, Philippa, they are not on the call tonight. So we can definitely have them re-engage the committee about that, about your question and the rationale, but those members are not here tonight.
Good for them.
I see Janice's hand up, and she's part of the group that's been working on this. Janice?
Yes, one thing we did discuss was that if the WMATA design engineers, have in mind one presentation, whether it's bottom to top or the size of the colors of the lines or the size of the letters, and we adamantly disagree and would like something different. Is there something we can do to put forth that it's not just six of us, that this would benefit not only the low vision community, but ridership at large? So what would be required for us to change WMATA's mind?
Oh, and Sandy, since no one's here to speak for Metro, if you want to share the information for the sake of others, why they're doing this.
Well, what I have heard is that And I've heard it from a couple of different people on the Metro staff, WMATA staff, that the way people navigate with maps these days, like Google Maps, is that you're starting here and you're moving forward into the distance. Now, that's not always true because you can set your Google Maps to have north at the top always, like a map, or you can set it so that it's in your car is moving up. But I'm sure you could, anyway. So
Okay.
y younger people think of traveling as traveling away, and that has been interpreted to be from the bottom to the top in two-dimensional space. And I don't understand it and I don't agree with it, but that's what I've heard, is that it's sort of an analogy to how people read maps today. I'm old school. I read a paper map, I lay the map out, I figure out which way is north on the map, which is almost always up. I have seen some really weird maps where north is left or right, but 99.9% of the time, north is up. And then but then I think in two-dimensional space as I look at that map. And yes, I may twist it to see where I'm going, or I may turn my head, or I may turn it inside of my head, so to speak. But I can travel from a point to the southwest. I can travel from a point to the southeast. And
Correct.
I would still be looking at that map in the same orientation. And that.
And this is why young people now have no idea what north or south or east or west is. If you have a map where every place you're going is north, like toward the top of the map, they can't even pass those questions on an intelligence test. If you're going north and you turn right, what direction are you going? They don't know.
Well, I'm not going to go that far, but the WMATA staff said this is the way younger people think. And I will say that one day when I was quizzing people in metro stations, so when I walk around with my white cane and my phone out, and people don't understand what I'm doing, and station managers come over and offer me help, and people in yellow vests offer me help. And I met a lot of really wonderful metro people this way. I say, I'm on the AAC committee and I'm very interested in signs. So I'm observing signs and I'm taking pictures. And then I'll start asking them questions. And I've asked older gentleman, station manager, he wasn't sure what I was talking about when I was trying to explain bottom to top, but he said, once I got explained it to him, he was like, well, that's just doesn't make sense. Sorry, my sort of somebody who was much younger on the staff was like, yeah, I kind of like bottom up, reading it. And there aren't examples in the stations yet, so I was trying to explain how it went. And a middle-aged person said, "I don't care either way. You can read it either way." So I really—that's a sample of three. But maybe it's an age-related thing. But across the board, I mean, we all learn to read top to bottom. So.
Any other questions or suggestions? If not, can we, do you feel we can close the topic, Sandy?
Yeah, because well, there were a few other things that were brought up at the L'Enfant headquarters where we got to see the
Mock-up.
mock-ups. But we need to take a closer look at, they have done some redesign of the station maps, not the station maps, the metro system map. And I admit I didn't even really look at that. There were some other things there, but. Things that were captured in the notes that Metro took during the meeting. Off the top of my head, I'm not, nothing's popping up.
Sari, Sari, hi.
Yeah,
Sandy, let
Steve.
me jump. Yeah, so you remember what one of the things relating to maps was that
The
the
location.
map, the location of the map, and many people who are on the station platforms don't realize that there is a map because there's one map and it's placed in the center of the station versus perhaps closer to the escalators. And that was an issue, I think, that was brought up at the meeting too.
And the map location, I recall Sarah Myers telling us at some point, maybe it was at a site visit, she was saying that there were something like seven maps on the lower platform at Metro Center. That ought to satisfy Steve. And I do keep trying to look for where are the maps. You know, they're near the fare gates, and often on the platforms, but to quote my friend and our colleague Sarah Rott, there should be consistency, you know, and I question whether they should be right at the bottom of escalators because will that cause a traffic jam? But is there some method or consistency that Metro is using? And that is definitely a question in my mind because if we know what the thought process is of where to locate it on the platform, and it's consistent from station to station, then, in my opinion, fine. But others may have other opinions. I know you're always lobbying for it to be in the center of the platform, which in some stations will be as far as possible from either escalator. Some stations have entrances at the far ends of the platforms. So when you come down, if a map is in the center, you have to walk to the center of the platform. But again, I don't think that right at the bottom of the escalators is the place to have a map and have people pausing to study it and blocking traffic.
Right. You absolutely. Absolutely. The first digital, digital displays are not up against the entrance or the escalator. In fact, they're a little bit away from it. And also, the down and on the on the stations. At the stations where the access is on the sides, it's the escalator that's going up, which has somewhat next to it the first digital display. So I don't think, Sandy, I don't think it, what you raised is an important issue, but I don't think it's an issue. What I've observed is people looking for maps or a map when they're standing on the platform, perhaps to confirm where they're going and where they need to transfer. And they don't seem to, they look around and they don't see, I think, what they're looking for is a map, and they just assume one is not there and they wait till they get on the train. But that's my only comment, because those digital displays often show public service announcements. So let's show a map instead, a little better placed.
Are you talking about the advertising signage, digital displays?
Yeah, not all display, not all stations have filled their displays with advertising. And to the extent they haven't, they show WMATA, when they show public service announcements.
So, Steve, my sense is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that wherever I've seen a metro system map, it stays a metro system map. It doesn't jump over to advertising or information. So I'm intrigued that you're talking about maps that then flip to being digital displays.
I all I'm saying, I'm just talking about the location of maps. This
Okay.
we're taking this further than what I'm saying. I'm saying, look, we It's just the location. And in terms of the major issues of the day, it's probably at the lower end. So, Santi.
Well, for all we know, those digital displays that are having advertisements fairly close to the bottom of an escalator, maybe that's considered prime real estate, and maybe those folks pay more to WMATA to have that location. But people don't stop and dwell there very long. It's just advertising.
One last hand, Sarah.
Sorry, trying to get off mute. Yeah, Sandy, I think on your last guess there, probably right. And I think you're also right about not wanting to put signs where people need to get up close or read information, someplace that's going to block traffic. If I had to try to figure out a description, I would probably call it at decision points. So I need that map when I need to decide, am I going this way or am I going that way? And they need to be like very visibly right there. So I'm not sitting around wondering, oh, if I take this escalator, am I going to go the wrong direction? If I turn this way, am I going to go the wrong direction? If I turn, which side of the platform I'm going to be on, am I going to get on the wrong train? And I'm sure that somebody out there has some engineering program that is very, has a program or a set methodology for figuring out exactly where those decision points are. And there's probably some really smart people that have already looked at these sorts of things. But if I had to come up with a terminology of my own, I would call it a decision point, and that's where I want that sign.
So I agree with you, Sarah. At decision points, you need information, but what is the map information do you need? Is it the whole metro system map, from Maryland to DC to Virginia? No.
Nope.
Is it the inside of metro information, to get from one platform to the other, to be sure you're at the platform going the right direction? Or is it the information like, I want to exit L'Enfant Plaza, and if I go this way, what will I wind up at? Yes, I understand your point about decision points that are both internal to the station and decision points for where am I going out of the station? Those are both really important. But I don't think of those as maps. I think of more as directions. I'm not sure what the right word is. But we
Well,
did hear. Okay, go
sorry,
ahead.
I'm thinking about the station ahead maps, which may not be maps at all. But I want to know, okay, if I take this escalator, it's going to take me to the platform that's going to take me to where it is I want to go. In that sense, if I'm coming up the escalators, I've gotten off of my train, then I want to know where's my exit, or which direction do I go to get the next, a connecting train. But I'm sure that there are really elaborate systems out there where people can basically walk through the system and go, okay, here's this imaginary figure walking through the thing, and they get to this point, what do we need to have there? And somebody's probably already thought about these things.
Well, I think it was at the meeting at L'Enfant headquarters, maybe it was in another place, that we heard they built a 3D model of L'Enfant Plaza station because it is so flipping complicated, so that they could figure out where are all the decision points. So they're
Exactly.
definitely thinking about this, which my hat's off to WMATA. They're ahead of me on so many points.
Maggie, you just put a note about we will have what?
Signage at the Metro Access meeting, but ahead of the meeting, so we don't disrupt the agenda of the Metro Access meeting. But our colleague did confirm that we can have the prototypes displayed before the meeting starts, and so at least one or two of them will be there as well and can address the inquiry about the justification for the seance. So I just wanted to let you know that.
This is next week.
Yes,
Yes.
sir. March 16th.
Great.
Meg.
One other point. We are at some meeting going to have officials from Gallaudet. And since they're really probably more than most of us in need of signs and whatever visible information they can glean where they want to go. Maybe we can also ask them the question too. When are we having guided
so we're inviting them to the site visit, but we can also invite them to the meeting on Monday if they're available, but the invite was for the site visit so that they can see the signage in real time as well.
So it may be two occasions when someone from Gallaudet comes?
Right. If they're available Monday, they definitely can participate. However, we engage them about the focus group, the on-site focus group at the station, the LaPlante station.
Okay. All right. Are there any other comments on this topic?
Can I just follow up on Maggie's last point? So I know that there are some individuals for some other organizations in the DC area who are deaf or deaf blind that would be interested in, you know, some sort of a focus group working on. Mostly they're interested in digital signs, things that have real-time information. I'm not sure that, I mean, I guess they could be invited to these various things, but we have a different plan for doing that. Is that right, Maggie?
Maggie, you're muted.
I'm so sorry. Pardon me. Yes, we do, for digital signage.
Okay, great.
And that's a good suggestion, Sarah. You know some of these people who may help us in this matter?
I would say I know of them. I'm not sure that I actually know any of them personally.
Okay.
But several other people from several other groups have reached out through contacts.
Oh. Well, if you can figure out some way that they can tie into the discussion, because obviously they're in most need of what's visible. I hadn't thought of that earlier, but that could be helpful for this particular question, in addition to whatever we expected of them in the scheduled meeting with Gallaudet. All right, if there's no other question or suggestion or comment, I guess we can move to the next topic. Maggie?
Oh, I'm Chair Calabia. The next topic for 5:15 was committee discussion, and then at 5:45 p.m., public comment.
Well,
so a little ahead of schedule.
Yeah. Are there any members of the public who are on board with us and wishing to ask a question or make a comment?
We do have a hand raised, Janice Samuels and then Sarah.
I was just trying to lower my hand, actually.
Okay. Well, Janice Samuels is our member of the public.
Yes.
I just wanted to make some comments about the fare evasion. So, you know, I hear your suggestion about having a set amount for a weekly bus fare, and then if the rider rides beyond that, in essence, they're riding free. But I don't think a fare evader is looking for a discounted ride. Fare evaders just, they're not going to pay. So I don't think that's going to entice them to pay their fare. You're always going to have some fare evasion. So I think one of the goals should be to get it down to an acceptable percentage. I totally disagree with putting pictures of the fare evaders on the bus to try to shame them, because I think that would endanger the bus operators. And I agree that the back doors should not be opened after dark, and that you should determine what events you would open the back doors to streamline people on boarding. But I think one way to reduce fare evasion is making people come in through the front door. And I also know, and how you go about rectifying this, I don't know. I know that some people who have free metro, they use their metro access identification cards to, ride the bus or rail for free. Some people give those IDs to other people to ride the bus for free. And it's not, here, take my ID. So if there's some AI that can help, those types of fare evaders, because that's a form of fare evasion as well. I don't know, but I just wanted to make those comments.
Well, thank you. I hadn't thought of that last point that you made, and I don't know what the solution is, but you're right. There must be a number of people who surreptitiously share their fare card and therefore help the other person.
Right.
You're right. Let's
Here in
see.
Columbia, we have Sandy Newzell.
Yes, Sandy.
So it's my understanding from something I heard that I believe the bus operators are told not to try to enforce paying.
That's true.
They're behind, plexiglass or plastic or whatever because of COVID, and now they're still behind, some sort of protection, and they're not supposed to get out of their seat and say to somebody, "Hey, you didn't pay your fare," because that can be confrontational and put them at risk. So
No,
the
that's
only thing
well.
they can do is give somebody the stink eye and hope for the that that doesn't precipitate anything, so.
They're not to confront fare evaders, regardless of what the circumstances are. They're not.
Right. Right.
So let's see, Steve.
So, Chair Calabria, we actually have Rico Dancy
Oh,
with a
okay.
question, and then Mr. Steve.
So, have we thought about monthly pass?
What?
Or have we thought about the monthly passes at all?
What?
Monthly, have we thought?
This is the interpreter. Rico's asking if you can hear his speaking. Can you hear him talking?
No.
Can you hear me now?
He said the monthly pass. Have we thought about the monthly pass? This is Rico.
As opposed to a weekly pass that Steve keeps talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yes, correct.
Rico, there is a monthly pass and there's also a weekly pass. So yes, there is a monthly pass. There are, one can pick and choose. Yes. I know I find that more bus-only riders opt for the weekly as opposed to the monthly. While I think this is just conjecture, I think Metro Rail riders, especially those who use Metro Rail for commuting, opt for the month, and they may get a concession from the employer or the government agency to offset or cover that cost for the monthly pass.
All right, thank you. I understand.
Any other?
Chair Calabria, we do have Steve Caffin next.
Oh, thank you. Hold on, I just have it here. I wanted to give you that you know, the information for the minutes.
Okay.
All right. And it was a discussion we all participated in. It dealt with emergency information and emergency announcements, and it became quite wide as a number of us raised different points relating to that. And Steve Caffin suggested night safety measures, i.e., limiting middle door boarding after dark, which is correct, and improving operator announcement cadence. Now, the operator announcement cadence was for the operators of Metro Rail and also for the announcements that are in the station, not the buses, because the announcements in the station, there's an echo. And unless that announcement is done very slowly, it's difficult to hear what the announcement is. And of course, on the rail, I'm certain that there's ongoing training, periodic training for the operators, and a session on, let's say, effective announcement, where they need to talk a little more slowly because there's noise and other issues going on, might be a worthy area. But it was for rail and stations that second part of the second part of the comment was in the minutes, not bus.
Yes, that's right. In our AAC handbook for rail car design, we mentioned that some kind of elocution lesson be given to operators, because except for the 7000 series, in which the recording has been done by, it must be some professional with perfect enunciation. In other cases, especially in the older series trains, the announcements made by the operators is garbled, or maybe due to the microphones that they use in those older systems. But in the older systems, it's really nothing at all like the enunciation given in the 7000 series. Would you agree with that, Steve?
Oh yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Night and day. And
Yeah.
if the operators just speak a little slower, for the older series trains, I think it would make a big difference. Certainly to visitors who may not be, familiar with the transfer points and the station names and things like that.
Yes. And in fact, next month, the bus rail subcommittee is having someone from involved with the 8000 series. Am I right, Maggie?
That is correct.
And that reminds me that some of us who were involved in packaging the AAC Railcar Design Handbook should relook at that and remember what we advised for the next meeting. Are there any other public comments or questions from anyone?
Yes.
I see Sarah's hand up.
Yeah, so I've never heard of this handbook thing, so it definitely sounds like something we ought to be sent around again and thought about.
The first recommendation was for WMATA to adopt the open gangways model, which even at the time that we were doing it, 75% of the operators around the world were or had already adopted open gangways, and we still had not. Since that time, of all places, Honolulu has launched its, and New York City has a couple of lines that use open gangways. Sarah, I will send you the link to the AAC Handbook on Railcar Design. We not only dealt with the open gangways recommendation, which was turned down when we made it, and only picked up under this administration, but we also had recommendations related to better enunciation, especially of from rider from operators of the older rail series and that sort of thing. So I will send that to you.
Tina,
Actually, I was going to
yes.
say, it'd be better if you could send it to Maggie and have her send it to the whole committee again, because there's obviously some other people that have only been on as long as I have or even less and probably don't have it either.
Okay, I'll send it as a link to Maggie and you can get it out to everyone. Are there any other public commenters?
No other hands at the moment.
Okay, and since Steve covered the emissions from the minutes, I guess we'll have that corrected and brought up at the next meeting. If there's no other business,
If there was time, Steve was going to bring up something about some pictures you sent that had to do with snow, and I can't
Right.
remember the other topic.
You
Want to show us now and comment on it? We have time.
I sent the email, and unfortunately, I sent the email a little too close to our meeting. I was finally able to gather these pictures together from my elusive disk drive I have, and they I don't know whether it's useful. If we can pull them up, that's fine. Otherwise, take a look at them and we can perhaps discuss them at the next meeting since none of them is particularly urgent, Tino. And they
Okay.
all have explanations underneath the pictures.
Well, we might have a long discussion on the open gangway strains. For one thing, and it's so late now in the construction process that I'm sure they can't do it. But New York City's open gangway trains have enlarged the door. And Sarah, this may be of interest to you. Larger open doors are great to help correct the problems that you had brought up, experienced by your daughter in having difficulties in getting out of a train. We also, now that I think of it, there's a lot of things that we have in there, many of them which had been taken care of. But yes, I'll send it to Maggie, and please, Maggie, get it out.
Oh, Tito,
Yep.
let me highlight in particular one of the photos I sent, and that was a picture of a seat that was reserved for Rosa
Right.
Parks in
Right.
commemoration of Rosa Parks Day on February 4th. It's the first front-facing, emphasizing the first front-facing seat in the bus, and every bus that I was on for about a week had that seat reserved, and the placard it said Rosa Parks Day, February 4. Today, this seat is reserved to honor Rosa Parks, and it's written in both Spanish and English. So that's picture number two.
Steve, they actually did that last year too, as
Yeah.
well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad they do it. And in fact, I remember opening one of the bus rail subcommittee meetings referring to her because she really, it was not just re related to transit, it was related to civil rights in general. that she helped open the doors for a discussion of these matters and action to be taken. Do you have any other picture that you wanted to mention?
Well, I included and there's a picture of a large tablet bus display. I think you know that the next bus displays, I think, for cost and efficiency are not those vertical long displays, but rather large tablets that they're placing in the displays that have next bus information. This,
Yeah,
uh, that,
they
that, that That and that works fine, but if you have three or four bus lines that are stopping at that place, it iterates every 20 seconds, and the next bus information goes past 30 minutes. So a person who arrives and sees times of, let's say, 21, 23, 27 minutes, because that hasn't iterated yet, could be confused. I think that may have been something that we talked about when Sarah Meyer was with us, and she said that yes, they were aware of it and looking at it. But I wanted to show a picture of it.
Oh yeah, I've shown a picture of the, we have them in Friendship Heights. Not every staff that holds a sign saying this is a bus stop, but in some. And in fact, a couple years ago, I showed a picture to Bus Rail of one such sign in Berlin, which covered five different bus lines showing when they would arrive. One of them near me here in Friendship Heights shows two lines, but will repeat when one is coming beyond the other. But it's only two lines. In Berlin, there was one that showed me five lines. So, I don't know when we're going to be able to get ahead on that, but you're right. Unfortunately, not every bus stop has such a thing. In New York, they have them also, of all places. I don't know when we're going to be able to backtrack and get that. We can't expect Sarah Myers to initiate all these innovations here in the Washington metropolitan area, but she's the one who could do it, and we've loaded her table with so many things already that I hesitate to load another thing.
No, that's true. And of course, these are only for shelters. Without a shelter, there's really no next bus information.
Oh no. Mine are at standalone bus stops. You know the staff.
Yeah, is that right?
Yes, it's a at a standalone bus stop. It'll cover two lines. As a matter of fact, one of the lines is a ride on, and it'll show you at least three times, and two might be the same line, say at 5 or 10 different minutes apart. You know, so there are these. They're not uniform, and there are not many. I don't know how many we can expect, but there are those. And of course, we've for years had them in the bus shelters, but sometimes there's only two or three at most. But I'm glad you brought it up because we have it here in Friendship Heights at least. And I'm sure there are others, but not at every bus stop with a staff. I see that it is 5:51. Are there any other public comments, Maggie?
None that we can see at this time.
This is Vanessa. I just wanted to acknowledge my presence for the record. I'm on 2184. I came in about an hour ago because I had a doctor's appointment.
Okay, so you're registered as being present during the meeting. Any other?
Thank you.
Any other announcement?
There are no other hands.
Excuse me?
There are no other hands at this time.
Okay. Since there's be no other hands and no business, I'll take them. Hello?
Chair Calabia, may I say my spiel?
Oh, sure.
Before you close, I need to say closing remarks.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So thank you all, committee members, Metro staff, guests, interpreters, and members of the public for your participation this evening. If you have questions, comments, and concerns, please send those to Metro AAC Chair at WMATA.com or by phone at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Okay. Having closed with that necessary comment, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Can I just interject a quick reminder about the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting? Maggie, do you want to say a little bit about that?
Sure. So the next meeting, which is March 16th, will be hybrid. You can either join in person or online. We will have members of customer experience sharing the station signage. We'll start that probably around 3:30 p.m. so we do not interrupt the Metro Access agenda.
I hope you get out that notice because I didn't know that such a schedule it has been contemplated. The 3:30 beginning.
So Chair Calabia, that came from tonight's meeting. So that wasn't planned ahead of time.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good. So get out that reminder. Now having completed the business at hand, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
A second?
I second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor of adjourning, say aye.
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 Hearing no objection, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, all. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Maggie.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
I forgot to describe myself yet once again, but I will put a reminder out.
Yeah, I do.
We'll see you all next week. Have a great one.
Okay. Thanks, Maggie.
You're very welcome.
A lot of orders.